Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Welcome, everyone, to SI Media with Jimmy Traina. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thank you for listening. We have an excellent episode for you today. We've got Ian Eagle from CBS Sports and Turner Sports calling the tournament, NBA action. He does Nets games locally. You know him from the NFL. Ian, as entertaining as ever on the pod, got into a lot of subjects. He's going to be calling the Final Four, not this year, but the year after this year. Jim Nance will step aside from the tournament. Ian gets the bump up to the lead assignment at the NCAA tournament. So we get into that, working with Bill Raftery. Got his thoughts on what it's like for Kevin Burkhardt dealing with this Greg Olsen and Tom Brady situation. Ian does the Nets game. So we talk about the implosion of the Nets with Durant and Irving. So good stuff with Ian. And then Sal Licata back for Train of Thoughts this week after a week off on vacation. Get into a little of Super Bowl stuff because we never talked to Sal about it. NBA All-Star things. And we get into the baseball rule changes with Sal. So that's this show. If you missed last week, Brian Curtis from The Ringer was on the podcast. He was excellent. We did a big review of Fox's telecast of the Super Bowl. Richard Deitch 2 weeks ago, Chris Berman 3 weeks ago, Jason McCourty 4 weeks ago. If you missed any of those episodes, dip into the archives, check them out, subscribe to the pod, leave a review on Apple. We're going to read them probably next week. All right, that's enough from me. Let's get to Ian Eagle and Train of Thoughts with Sal Licata, all right here on SI Media with Jimmy Traina. All right, joining me now, SI Media podcast regular. It's actually the SI Media with Jimmy Traina podcast. Now, I always forget that we put my name in there to massage my ego. one of everyone's favorites, one of the top play-by-play men in all of sports, Ian Eagle from CBS Sports, Turner Sports. Ian, how are you?
Jimmy, doing well. It is All-Star break, so I thought, oh, this is going to be awesome. I don't have to shave for 5 days. And then I get the text from you, hey, can you do the podcast? And I know there's the video component. So the back of my mind, of course, my answer is, yeah, I'm in. But I recognize that I then had to shave because unfortunately, when I have some growth, it doesn't work. It looks like a smattering of pudding. So I have to make the decision. If you put a clip out there, everyone is going to look at it and go, what the hell's going on there? Like, I need a Sharpie to do the connectors. There's some people, you know them. Spiro Ditas is one. I'm very jealous. The guy could be cleanly shaven one Saturday on a college basketball game. 1 week later, he could have a full-grown beard, perfectly manicured. I have no idea how that happens. It's an incredible talent. We all went to like junior high school with people like seventh grade. I show up and like on a Tuesday, one of the kids has a beard. I was like, do you have a mortgage? What the hell happened over the weekend?
I there's a part of me that wishes you didn't go here because now I have so much to say, so many questions, so many things to because one, I feel awful. You shave for this. No one should ever shave for this.
And
and here's the thing. I always shave for this. Always. It's the only time I shave is for this because of the gray. The gray is what I can't see right now. I'm looking in the Zoom. I see the gray and I want to kill myself. But this has been a very, very rough week. There's been a lot going on, so I didn't shave.
Yep.
And it's like maybe the second time ever I didn't shave while doing this on Zoom, like for the past 2 years. And you bring up the shaving to start. How often, now I need to know, how often do you shave?
I shave every game day. So if there are days off in between games, I don't shave. I don't need to be on camera. I don't shave. Right. But if I have a game day, I shave. And the one other thing that struck me when you texted and I thought about the clips that you've posted, and you know, I go way back with Sal Licata. I love the guy. I really do. What struck me in one of the more recent clips that I saw with Sal, and I'm going to make a blanket statement here. I believe that Zoom is very flattering for bald people.
He looks good every week.
They have figured it out. It's symmetrical. You don't even look at that area. You just accept that it belongs there. And Sal, as the latest example, he looks fantastic on Zoom.
Well, here's the thing about Sal. Now, he has not told me this, but I know Sal like a book. He went away last week because him and his family went to, I think, Aruba. And I know when Sal goes on these trips, he goes on some maniacal diet for about a month before, where he doesn't eat sugar and he works out.
Because he knows he's taking his shirt off.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's in shape. Yeah. He looks good. Yeah. And here's another secret that this is going to blow up Sal's spot. 95% of the time when we tape our segment for this podcast, he's doing it 5 minutes after he's on SNY.
Oh, so he's got makeup.
There it is.
It's in full, you know, that's a
pull back the curtain.
He looks very angular on the Zoom. And I think now there might be some contour going on with the makeup. And the other part, look, we've all toyed with Zoom. There's this one setting where it will touch up your appearance. And every now and again, I think, oh, let me try that. And then I do it and I look like Madonna at the Grammys. I'm like, whoa. I cannot do it. And I never go with it. But there is that one moment where you're like, I want to touch up my appearance. It's time. But I don't actually.
Well, you're not, you're not one of, the biggest pop star of all time. So I don't think you need to worry about it.
No, I don't have to touch up.
Yeah. But now all I see is the gray and it makes me want to vomit. So I got to try not to look. So I'm going to be looking down a lot while we chat.
Yeah. It's interesting that I went there. Obviously we had no discussion about this whatsoever. I knew your vulnerability I just tossed in kryptonite right out of the gate.
Usually the fatness is the vulnerability, but they cut this where it's like I'm from the neck up. So you can't see the disaster below the neck. So it's just the gray. The gray is the problem. So, it's funny. We're speaking. I saw something on Twitter earlier and it wasn't in my head to bring this up. And then I thought it would be a good way to start. It's the anniversary. I don't know the year. It's probably 40 years. Today's the anniversary that we're taping this of Al Michaels' Miracle on Ice call. What is Ian Eagle's all-time favorite call? And it doesn't have to be what's, most people consider, Do You Believe in Miracles, the best, but what's your, it doesn't have to be the best. It's what you personally like as a favorite.
Yeah, I mean, that's up there. That was one of those all-time classics where you remember where you were. Like, that's a big part of this.
I wasn't putting yourself back there. I was like 5 years old.
All right, so you're young.
I'm not that young. I'm just saying I wasn't watching that game. So for me,
I remember where I was, and I remember what was going on in my life at the time, and the fact that I avoided the score on the radio to make sure that it was fresh, and I knew nothing, and I was watching it in its purest, most earnest form. I think the Jack Buck Kirk Gibson call is up there as one of the all-time greats where it just captured the moment. If you're a New York guy, you might lean towards a Marv Albert call, even a Bob Murphy call. I don't know if you remember
The
game that went into extra innings and Murph, they win the damn thing, five to the, whatever it was. But the fact that he said damn on the air because it was a marathon of a game, it's those kind of calls that stick with you over time. But do you believe in miracles? I think it just captured what everybody was thinking. And that's what a great call is supposed to do. It's supposed to shed light on what is in your deepest feelings and emotions, and then uncork it in that moment.
Do you remember? So since you heard that call, do you remember having it almost trigger you in terms of like, I want to do this for a living, or this is something cool, or did that come later?
Yeah, I had known. I was 10, but I had already known by 8 or 9 what I wanted to do. So at that point, I was very much aware and I was paying attention to all of these things, mostly Marv Albert in New York, because he was doing the Knicks and the Rangers and he was doing the local NBC news at 6 and 11 o'clock. But on a national level, that was a big moment if you were an aspiring sportscaster, because that call just stuck with you. Do you believe in miracles? Miracles, the idea of that. And then the added part, you know, my dad was in a very successful advertising campaign concurrently with that. And it was a Xerox campaign. And the slogan on the campaign was, "It's a miracle." So it resonated with me even more. My dad was making a good living doing this, doing commercials. At that point, starting to work for Xerox in a personal services deal where he was traveling the country as the monk and opening up Kinko shops. So that word meant a lot in my household. And I was actually watching the game in his study. He was not there. You know, I had a really interesting family background. My father's first wife was staying with me and we watched the game together. And I'm not related to her. You know, I called her my ex-mom. That was our little thing. But my mom was living on the West Coast, had moved to LA at that point. My dad was traveling and I watched that game with his first wife.
Yeah. That's why it's embedded in your brain.
Completely embedded in my brain.
You said something there that I want to touch on just for people listening, because I don't know if this was a regular thing across the country. We're both New Yorkers. You mentioned Marv and you said something there. I don't know how many people listening to this realize this. Back in the early mid 80s, Marv Albert used to do the 6 o'clock sports report on the local NBC channel, then get over to the Garden to do the Knicks or the Rangers, and then get back to NBC to do the 11 o'clock. Now you say that today and people probably don't believe that's a real thing that happened. How insane is that? Is that what that was what happened with Marv those years?
Utter insanity. And then would do NBC Sports on the weekends. So would do either an NFL game or a boxing match or pregame, postgame for MLB, whatever that assignment was, he would then shoehorn it in. Yeah. I was blown away. And honestly, that's really what drew me to this business, was the idea that you could just go from event to event to event and get paid to do it. And the fact that Marv did it so well, did it at such a high level, there was such a consistency in his approach, in how he came across in all of these different games. And then, yeah, you're right, pop up, 6 o'clock news with Sue Simmons and Chuck Scarborough, and then the 11 o'clock news doing the wrap up. And I would just think to myself, he just did the game. How the hell is he in the studio doing highlights of the other game? It was mind boggling.
It would be great web content now for someone to have filmed him and done video of how he goes from NBC News to the Garden back to NBC News.
You're right. You're right. That would have been a perfect
in the city,
HBO Real Sports. That would have been a perfect segment for them.
And to wrap up the Miracle on Ice, then we'll move on. I got to just tell this quick story. It was the anniversary of when the OJ car chase which when I hear O.J. Karcher, the only thing I think of is the prank call to Peter Jennings, where the guy said, I see O.J., and then Al, and Peter Jennings believes the whole thing, and Al has to come on and say, lest anyone think that was a real call, it was totally farcical. And this was before I had ever had any contact, exchanges, anything with Al. I write in my column that day that I know everyone thinks Miracle on Ice is Al's best call, but for me, it'll always be this. And he actually emailed me out of the blue and said, I agree with you. That's my favorite call, too. So all these people who love Miracle on Ice, Al likes the Howard Stern prank call better.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I just had to get that out.
And it's funny because you think about, all right, where was I during that moment? During that particular moment,
that
I was at MSG.
Okay.
The NBA finals were going on, if you remember correctly.
Yeah, Knicks and Rockets.
Knicks and Rockets. And I'm doing stuff for FAN at that point. I'm in the back as this thing is now breaking on screen. Chuck Daly was doing pre and post for NBC. I end up standing next to him as this is unfolding on television. And he just turns to me. He goes, what the hell is going on there? I was like, I'm trying to explain. OJ Simpson is being followed. There's a camera and nobody knows how this is going to end. And, you know, there were some other words exchanged there that I'm not going to recreate now. But Chuck was, and it was just me, Chuck, and then a bunch of other media people watching the screen. And there is video, if you want to look it up, of Bob Costas. Someone has the raw footage. It's on YouTube somewhere of him handling that situation. And it's not just the on-air portion. It's off-air portion of him getting instructions in his ear as to what was happening, and then the added part was Bob's relationship with OJ. So the surreal nature of Costas navigating that, traffic copping that situation, and then still somehow doing it at an exceptionally high level. It was strange. It was a strange, strange night, strange time.
I think for my lifetime, just for when I was alive, to me, that's the wildest sports night in the history of sports for my life. If someone wants to make the argument, the Jazz with COVID.
It was bizarre.
Who was the Rudy Gobert? No, who was
Rudy
it?
Gobert.
Yeah. Rudy Gobert. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
You could go there. For me, the OJ chase combined with the NBA finals, that to me, craziest night in the history of sports. While I've been alive.
You just said it though. If you can remember what was happening in your life at that exact moment, that means it had a fairly large impression on you. And the Gobert situation, I know exactly where I was. I was in a hotel room in San Francisco. And the second it happened, I just went to the airport. I knew that the Nets Warriors were canceled. I walked outside. I ordered an Uber. I got in the car. I went directly to the airport. I did not have a flight. My flight was the next night, a red eye. And I went to the counter and it was eerie. I know that there was chaos everywhere. There was not chaos at the San Francisco airport. It was right before the chaos. And I just walked right up to the counter. Phones, you couldn't even get on the United app. And I went directly to the counter and said, hey, I've got a red eye tomorrow. Any way of switching it to tonight? And the woman behind the counter and the keyboard, she goes, yeah, let's take a look. Yeah, you're good. I was like, thank you.
Yeah, and you were stuck. Yeah.
Bizarre. Yeah. So you're right.
Because the chaos really didn't start, I think, till like 2 days later. Well, that's when... Because if I remember correctly, the Gobert thing happened, the NBA shut down, but the next day, like the Big East played like the first half of the tournament.
They did.
This is the most ridiculous.
And the other part, Jimmy, I get on that plane. So I take a red eye now the night that Trump addresses the nation, Gobert, the whole situation goes down. And on the plane, not an exaggeration, one mask. There was one guy sitting two rows in front of me that was wearing a mask. And in the back of my mind, I was like, yeah, that's odd.
Yeah.
That's what's going on there. Like, that's
where
your mind was.
Because when it first happened, they would tell us wear gloves and don't touch, wash everything down. And then when they got a hold of what this was, then they were able to figure it out. It was Tom Hanks and Rudy Gobert on the same night. So if you're on that plane, I would imagine the Tom Hanks news too was.
Well, and the other part, just on a personal level, Jimmy, that happened in Australia. My daughter was abroad in Australia. My wife was visiting her.
Oh my
That same night, all of this news breaks. Tom Hanks, positive in Australia. NBA shut down. I get on a red eye. And then the crazy part, this is psychosomatic, of course.
Yeah.
I don't sleep on that red eye. I'm not a great plane sleeper to begin with. And with everything that was going on, I get 0 minutes of sleep. I land, I get to my house, my wife and my daughter are in Australia. I'm trying to figure out how the hell to get her out of there. And at that point, I've convinced myself I have COVID because I feel like complete crap.
Right.
I didn't have COVID,
right.
But I was just so run down and mentally fatigued from everything that was going on.
I got to ask, how did your wife and daughter end up getting, were they able to get back?
Yeah. So I got my wife out the next day.
Okay.
We got her to Houston and then Houston to Newark. My daughter ended up staying for another 10 days, eight
oh,
to
wow.
10 days. And then got her out through San Francisco. It was messy, obviously. It was really messy for a lot of people at that time. But the stress came from the mystery of whether or not they were going to just shut down all travel out of Australia into the U.S. It was a hairy situation, to say the least.
I had a cousin of mine who was in Peru and was stuck there for a very long time. It was very scary and was not good.
This was really uplifting, Jimmy. Great stuff.
Well, we can talk about, you taking over for Nance and getting some happy thoughts in. Before we got to talk about that because next year we have Jim Nance will call the Final Four this year and then Ian takes over and we'll discuss that. I'm going to ask you one thing before we get to that just because the big media news over the last, several weeks is, Greg Olson has emerged here with Fox as a very popular analyst.
Yep.
Brady's going to come in after his off year next year. And I'm fascinated in all of this, in the Kevin Burkhardt situation of it. And you can maybe shed some light as the play-by-play. So you're the play-by-play guy. You have this really good partnership because he's been partners with Olson for a couple of years.
Yep.
And I've said this before on the podcast. I think if it was any other player coming in, maybe Burkhardt or Fox rethinks the situation, but it's the greatest quarterback of all time. You're not going to pass up that brand coming to your network. What if you're Burkhardt there, how, we'll use a Chris Mad Dog Russo word here, how dicey is that scenario for Burkhardt and navigating it?
He is in a tough spot, Jimmy. No, he's a pro and he's so easy to work with and so malleable. He's going to be able to adjust whatever the decision is. The fact that they have another year together, I think for both of them probably is a sense of relief that it didn't end with the Super Bowl. They get to do this for another year. There will be speculation as to what Tom wants to do. He's taking a year to figure out exactly what he wants. Does he want to do this every weekend? Does he want to make this that big a part of his life? And he might love being off for a year. So if you're Greg Olson, you do what you've been doing. Go out, do excellent work. He and Kevin are a terrific team. I ended up doing a couple of things with Greg when he was still in the NFL during COVID. I got hired to do two events that were done remotely via Zoom or one of these other platforms. And I was blown away at how honest he was, how sharp he was, how much insight he provided just in that setting. You could tell this guy had a chance to be really good at this. So it's not that shocking that he's done this at a very high level. If you're Kevin, go about your business. That's the only thing you can do. The other part of the story too, Jim, these are arranged marriages. You don't get to choose who you work with. Management makes the decision. You put your trust in that. And then I can just tell you from my perspective, you go out and you make it work. That's your job. Your job is to make it work.
I feel bad for Burkhardt from this standpoint. Feel bad's a little strong. I mean, the guy's the lead NFL announcer for Fox. But if it worked, if the plan goes as it's supposed to, where the year after next, Olson is removed to the and goes to number two booth and Brady comes in, I've said this the last few weeks. I feel like Brady comes in with a target on his back. Fans are really taken to the Burkhardt and Olson booth.
Mm-hmm.
And I've used the wrestling term where Brady comes in as a heel. I mean, you have a lot of people who don't like Tom already, NFL fans, which I don't think is rational. But that's my own opinion on it. But he comes in sort of behind the eight ball. And that's tough for you know, Burkhardt, who is having such success with Olsen. Like you said, he's a professional. He'll make it work.
Sure.
But, it, you know, I feel for him from that standpoint, because I think, and maybe this is what you could talk about too. I mean, when you've established now, it'll be 4, 5, 6 years with Olsen, and he's got to change again. I'm sure that's not ideal, even if it is Tom Brady. And like I said, this is only happening because it's Tom Brady. If this is someone else, yep, it's not happening.
Tom in the Sergeant Slaughter role was not what I was anticipating here, Jimmy, but
me either.
I get it. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. Look, I can only speak from my own experience and also experience with Tom. Tom is extremely likable, extremely smart, and extremely insightful. I think he has a chance to be great at this if he wants to do this and truly do it full time. This guy hasn't done anything poorly. Anything he puts his mind to, he's going to do well. If he puts the time and effort in like I think he will, he'll want to be the best at it. And you're right, there'll be the natural backlash because, A, it's Tom Brady, so there are many fans who already have a general feeling on him. And then the second part, there are fans that like the pairing.
Yep.
And rightfully so. They've been excellent together. So, yeah, is there an X on his back? Yeah, he's dealt with a lot worse. I don't think that it's something that he would lose a whole lot of sleep over. I think the part that he's going to have to determine is he all in? If you're all in, then this, not to say it consumes every bit of your being, but knowing him, he'll want to be great. And being great requires you to put the time and effort in.
Yeah. I'm with you on everything you said. And I think there's a lot of people that don't like Tom because of what he did on the field. And I think those people don't realize, I mean, I've heard from so many people who know him that, you know, really funny.
Yeah.
Great personality. He didn't show it all those years in New England because of Belichick. Showed it more when he went to Tampa. You shared a great story on here about Tom where he shamed you for eating donuts and soda.
Yeah.
So, I'd like to see him give it a shot. And it stinks that it would have to be at, you know, sort of Olsen's, I don't know the word I'm looking for.
But yeah, expense, we'll just move on. But
expense. Yes, thank you.
Yeah. I don't know. All. Look, yeah. I think also if you've proven yourself in this business as a commodity, as somebody that networks want to work with, then good things will happen.
Yes.
Greg's done very well. Greg is a really terrific guy, works hard at this, cares a lot. And that comes across on the air. It matters to him. So if it's there, if it's somewhere else, you don't know. It's an unpredictable business. Just do quality work, treat people the right way, and odds are things will eventually work out in your favor.
Perfect transition, because that's what happened to you. And now, after this year, you will call the Final Four for CBS. Jim Nantz will do it this year from Houston, which is obviously has special meaning for Jim. And then do you know, where's the Final Four the year you do it, that first year?
It's right up your alley, Las Vegas.
Oh, maybe I'll make a trip. Visit you and Raph. You know, I heard Sean McManus, the chairman of CBS Sports, he was on with Dog last week on Sirius. Dog grilling him about Tony Romo, which was funny. And he asked about you, and Sean said, you deserve to be able to call this. You deserve a lead assignment.
That's really nice.
How did you tell me, like, how you got the news and how it all came down for you? And were you surprised? And I'm sure you were ecstatic, but give us a little behind the scenes of getting the news that you'd be calling the Final Four the year after this.
Yeah, this had been talked about the last couple of years as a possibility. Nothing that was etched in stone, but you know, certainly a discussion. And I knew that it was something in the back of their mind. A lot of it was based on Jim and his decision moving forward as to what he was going to do in regards to the event. I think it was really important to him to do the final one in Houston, to have this full circle moment. So the idea of succeeding him, and that's really what it is, I'm succeeding him in this role, I'm not replacing him. What he's done is unprecedented. It will never be matched. To do 30 years of this event as the play-by-play announcer means that you are in many ways synonymous with it. And for me, it's a huge honor and a huge responsibility, but I can't even say that there was one specific moment of that's it. it's happening. It really was the buildup of conversation over a couple of years trying to figure out what the schedule would look like. And, you know, my assumption is that eventually a conversation took place between Jim and management, and the determination was made that this would be the final one for him. So it's really a wonderful story for him. For me, there will be plenty of time to talk about my background in it and the NCAA tournament and what have you. But for now, I think it's best that the focus is on Jim, and he gets to go out in style.
And he will, I'm sure, especially with that Final Four in Houston. And yes, you deserve all the praise. You deserve the gig. Here's what I want to talk about in terms of you call. I mean, we got to get a year there, so hopefully everything. But getting reunited with Raftery, if that is the plan, where, because it's Raftery in Grand Hill.
Yeah.
Now, I understand, you know, people want to talk about Raftery's age and everyone's an ageist. If they have to give us at least 1 year of Ian and Raft together. I will write columns about CBS every day if I have to. We need 1 year of Ian and Raftery together, because I don't think people understand the phenomenal pairing. Wait, tell me when the news broke, did you hear from Raft?
I talked to Raft a lot. So yeah. It really was just in the midst of our general conversation. It wasn't a specific call. It was more talking about other things and then thrown in the middle, like, oh yeah, I heard the news. That's great. I end up doing a rap impression every time I'm on with you. Jimmy, yeah. I have no idea if there's an over-under in Vegas. How many Raf impressions will he do over the course of the podcast? Yeah, look, Raf and I go back to, 1994 in terms of a relationship, real relationship. But the first time I truly met Bill, other than him doing a Syracuse game during my 4 years there, it was the Big East tournament, Madison Square Garden, 1990, my senior year. I have to do a pregame interview with somebody before the Syracuse game in the Big East tournament. And Raf is standing on the court, walking towards his broadcast location. And I kind of went with the screw it attitude. I just went directly up to him and said, hey, Mr. Raftery, coach, I'm Ian Eagle. And he goes, what? Like, what does that mean? I'm Ian Eagle. I work WAER Syracuse. Do you have a few minutes for a pregame interview? And Jimmy, you know how this stuff works. He could absolutely blow me off there, and nobody would even think twice about it. And what does he do? He says, yeah, kid, let's go. That's it. And we did it right there. 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes, you know, classic Rav talking about the tournament and a couple of sayings here and there. And I shake his hand at the end and wrap up and head way upstairs, because that's where they put you for college radio, up in the hockey press box, and tell my broadcast partner, I got Bill Raftery. And oh my God, that's huge. Like that's the great part about this journey in many ways, that people that you looked up to that you've now had a chance to interact with, and people that I looked up to growing up and wanting to be in this business, and to find out they're actually genuine, good human beings. And that's what Bill is. He's the best. And he called me kid, which is par for the course. And knowing Bill now, like I know him all these years later, I realized that no matter what I say, no matter who I mention to him, said hello or sent their best, he then backs it up with, oh, he's a great kid. So I don't know, a couple of years ago, I was in the company of Jerry West, and he said, oh, what game do you have this weekend? I told him, oh, I'm doing this game, Kentucky, Florida, with Bill Raftery. He said, oh, send him my best. So I see Bill. I said, hey, I saw Jerry West. He sends his best. He goes, oh, what a nice kid. I go, what a nice kid. the math doesn't work, man.
No, does not add up. That's great. That's great. And then you call a tournament with him a year from, Final Four with him a year from now. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Crazy.
It's great. Now, obviously, I became fans of you and Raftery calling the Nets games. You still call the Nets games. They have had a surreal season, to say the least.
Yes.
Were you stunned? forget Kyrie because he's a disaster. Were you stunned when they traded Durant?
Not stunned. I thought the dominoes could fall. There was a part of me that probably deep down knew once the Kyrie thing went south that that was the point of no return. And whatever agreements and discussions took place over the summer, which were real, and Kevin Durant agreeing to come back, not forcing the Nets to trade him, there might have been a caveat in there of, hey, if this thing breaks apart, I still want the option of being dealt. And will you live up to that word, which Josiah, Sean Marks, and the Nets did. So my understanding of it is they realized that KD was going to want out no matter what, and it was a matter of, can you get the best deal now and begin the process of trying to build this team back up? Or do you try to get by with the group and hope that KD is fully engaged and fully energized and fully on board? And the determination was made that it was best to make the full rip of the Band-Aid, which is what they did. Obviously, they deemed the situation untenable and recognized that it was irreparable. They were not going to be able to fix this, even though they had done it a couple of times before. They were not going to be able to pull it off again.
What's been the vibe with the Nets fans since the trade? Do you feel like it's been a huge setback in terms of them being demoralized? Or you feel like, okay, we're starting over, but
yeah,
you know, Mikal Bridges is a good player, got a little nucleus here. What's the vibe inside of like Barclays now on the night?
Yeah, basis? Probably more the latter of, all right, there's some good pieces here. It looks like it's a fun, entertaining team. The one sobering part of it is you have to know you're not winning a championship. So You went into the last three seasons with the notion that you could win an NBA title, and that didn't happen. They came close with a conference semifinal appearance, Kevin Durant's toe, if it's behind the line, they beat the Bucks in a game seven, and that sets off a chain reaction. Mike Budenholzer probably gets fired by Milwaukee. Giannis Antetokounmpo may ask out. His reputation would have been highly questioned that he couldn't win a championship or get a team over the top. Durant would have gotten to the Eastern Conference Finals. They would have played the Atlanta Hawks. Odds are they would have beaten the Atlanta Hawks even without Kyrie and James Harden, who was banged up. And then maybe an NBA Finals appearance against the Phoenix Suns. Who knows at that point? Phoenix might win a title. Chris Paul's legacy is completely different. So you have this sliding doors effect on one play. Kevin Durant's toe is on the line, ties the game at the end of regulation to force overtime, game seven of the conference semifinals, instead of winning the game with a three. Steve Nash, who knows at that point if he goes to an NBA Finals, if he wins a championship, well, he's probably not getting fired a couple of years later. So from my perspective, you had to swing the bat. You had a chance to get Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Jimmy, the way it happened probably was pretty telling in how it was going to evolve. They were basically told, the Nets, right as the clock struck midnight on free agency, that both are coming. There was no meeting. There was no presentation in the Hamptons. There was no sit down to talk about what kind of team they want to build and what kind of culture they've developed. None of that happened. They were told Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are coming. They're a package deal. Are you in? Yeah, we're in. And that was it. Yeah. That's how the relationship started. And it kind of ended the same way without a whole lot of fanfare and conversation. And it was just poof, over.
Yeah. I mean, Kyrie had way, you know, he was way more of a headache than Durant. I mean, I think obviously if Kyrie stayed, Durant probably would have stayed.
Yes.
Kyrie,
that's what would have happened. Yes.
Yeah. Was it difficult for you at all? Obviously you're a professional, you have a job to do, but when Kyrie is, you know, promoting an anti-Semitic movie and then defending it and saying all this just wacky stuff. Is that difficult for you to be in that arena calling his games?
Sure. It is. You know, it's hard not to allow the personal stuff to seep in to what you do. Now, when the headset goes on and I'm calling a game, my job is to best describe what's happening on the court, on the field. And if you're not doing that, then you're not doing your job well. So I could separate and compartmentalize the job. But yeah, of course, on a personal level, there's a lot of questioning, why is this happening? Why are you going there? And when given the opportunity, my dealings with Kyrie have all been very positive on a personal level. But look, there's not a whole lot of the back and forth like there used to be. The way things are set up, it's not really going to happen that way. You're not around the players at the level that you once were in traveling with an NBA team. Separate buses, the way you board the plane, the players go one way, you go the other way, completely different sitting area. And you would have to make a really conscious effort to get in there in order to interact at the level that you used to. The way it was when I started with the Nets, one bus. You might sit next to a player on the bus or on the plane. That's how the setup was. Wow. There really was not the separate areas of how you did things. And look, that doesn't mean it's a positive, it's a negative. It's just the reality of what it is. Years ago, I know you're a big fan of Richard Jefferson.
Yes.
RJ was on the Nets. RJ was a pisser from day one. Just a natural contrarian, ball buster, the whole nine yards. And the Nets signed a player, drafted him by the name of Zoran Planinic from Croatia. He knew zero English, zero. And Richard Jefferson told him, hey, look, you want to learn English? Watch the Chappelle Show. You'll learn English. So I'm the only dude on the bus before a road trip. And Zoran Planinic, this is about a month into the season, walks onto the bus. I'm the only guy on the bus. And I nod my head. I go, hey, what's up, Zoran? He goes, I am Rick James, bitch.
Oh, my God.
That's it.
And just are you serious?
Yes, 100%. So you want to get to know somebody? You can get to know them in that setting.
That is unbelievable. And I'm sure Richard was very proud of his effort.
Oh, my gosh. When I told him the story, he doubled over in laughter. And so to wrap it up on Kyrie, there's not a whole lot of FaceTime between player and broadcaster. Maybe on the layup line, a what's up, a handshake, but not a lot of deep, detailed time. With Kyrie, I think he boxed himself into a corner. And instead of just saying, hey, I screwed up, I'm sorry, I didn't realize... That would have solved a lot of these issues, but
double down.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of like Fonzie, Jimmy. He just couldn't say I was wrong.
He would never. And here's what. And obviously, this is far from the worst thing he did. I personally, I am so tired of, and I hate the fake public apology that happens because people are pissed off about something, and you know, like last week. Tiger apologizing because he handed the guy the tampon. I mean, just can you imagine writing that headline, Tiger Woods, but whatever. So I hate the fake, but Kyrie did the apology. And then the day he got traded to Dallas, deleted it from his Instagram. That's even worse. Like, it's just, what are you doing? Oh God. Enough about Kyrie. Richard Jefferson, I would imagine, is a lot of fun to work with on the Nets games.
He is.
He doesn't seem like he seems like he's always on. Is Richard ever not on?
Oh, no. No, off the air. You can get him in a tranquil moment. And Richard is a really smart dude.
Yeah.
He is unpredictable, yes, in many ways, but eager to excel. So I just know in my own experience on the broadcast side, he had very little experience. You know, he had done the podcast a bit, but he was trying to go into traditional media. And the first game we did together, first couple of games we did together, I could tell it was going to work because he was himself. Yeah. And that's always that's the key.
Always.
Yeah. Can you crack the veneer? Right. And with Richard, it was not hard. The headset went on and he doesn't have much of a filter. He made over $100 million as a player. So I don't think he fears recourse like others may fear it. He cares. He cares about his reputation. He cares about doing quality work. He cares about being a good teammate, all of those things. And he cares about actually doing and doing a good job and and having insight and bringing something to the table that matters to him. But he is a naturally funny guy, and that does come across on television, and he doesn't really hold back to a point. He knows there's a lot. We've gotten right up to the line. I think I've joked on the air with him. I said, oh, it's always so exciting to work with you, Richard, because every broadcast could be your last broadcast. It might be over tonight.
That would be terrible.
No.
I messaged him about 3 hours ago to come on the podcast next week. So if you want to just tell him to check his messages, I'd appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Richard really responds to that well.
Yes, I'm
People
sure.
People telling him what to do.
I have two ridiculous ones here to end this podcast because you're always good for stuff like this. Do you know the first question that comes up when you when your name is Googled?
No.
Why does Ian Eagle pronounce his name like that?
Oh, I should have said
that. That's just lame. That's the number one thing. It's lame.
Well, especially it's
when Ian Ziering paved the way. And you know.
Yeah, it's also that people are under the impression that I chose it somewhere along the way. That like at age 16, I said, enough of this Ian crap. I'm going all in on Ian. Like, I didn't pick it. This was not me. My parents picked it.
Very good. And then the last thing is, today is when we're taping this today, this is the day Aaron Rodgers is supposed to emerge from his darkness retreat. How long can Ian Eagle last in a darkness retreat?
Oh, man. Are there drugs involved, Jimmy?
From what he, well, I don't think I'm allowed to say what I want to say here, but it's Aaron Rodgers. But what he's the way he made it, you know, made it sound on McAfee was no light, dark room, a slot for them to bring him food, and absolutely nothing else. And then, of course, was stunned that people found this, you know, bizarre. The perpetual victim.
Do I get Netflix? Netflix for the day?
There will be no devices.
No devices.
No devices. Just you and your thoughts.
Honestly, like,
if you
said to me, gun to your head, I could make it one day. I believe.
Really?
I could make it one day. I believe I could. Alone with my thoughts, trying to find a meditative state, I believe I could make it one day.
But not two.
I don't believe I could make it two.
Yeah.
I'm being honest, just like I'm being honest about my name, that it's Ian, that my parents gave me this name. I did not change it at any point. This was my birth name. I honestly believe I could go one day.
Yeah. I think, I would think if you can sleep for a bulk of time and then you wake up and then it's get me the hell out of here.
Yeah. I could do one.
I just have so many questions. Like the food is handed to him in a slot.
Yeah.
How are you supposed to eat the food if you can't see?
Oh, great point.
Thank you.
I feel only.
I'm not even going to get into the bathroom issues, but just how do you eat if you can't see what you're eating?
Like you would have to have like Jell-O of some sort. I could feel that. I would know it's Jell-O. Everything else.
How are you cutting a steak in the dark?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure it's a steak. That's what they're giving him with a full cutlery. No doubt about it.
But now here in New York, we're dealing with headlines that go, Jets interested in David Carr, but waiting for Aaron Rodgers to come out of his darkness retreat. I'm like, the whole world has gone mad. Does no one see what's going on here?
Yeah. Secondary headline, Aaron Rodgers has Ruth's Chris in darkness room.
I mean, if you're going to be stuck in the dark, you better have a good meal. What else do you get? You know.
A good sizzling steak. That I could feel. That I would know. I would know. I could feel and hear that butter popping.
But you're cutting, you know, when you're cutting it in the dark, it can be a major
That's what concerns you. Of all the things, how would I cut my food, man?
Well, how do you just see anything that you're eating?
I have no idea. It's a great point.
Where do you stab the fork?
Is he in a loincloth? What is he wearing in the darkness? Oh, that's the other part. What's happening? Are you in full sweatpants, sweatshirt?
I don't even know if he's allowed to have it. Well, what if he gets hot and cold? He can't work the thermostat. He can't see anything.
Is it not climate? Are you in like someone's attic? Is that what it is? So it's climate control?
He said it was a very, very small house. He said a small house.
Small house.
I'm assuming by that it means like a room, a bedroom. I mean, there's no need for a kitchen. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
These are great questions, Jimmy.
Well, you'll get to interview him before a game, and you can find when the NFL starts next year. And
he's actually good. He's good in production meetings. I'll tell you that. He is good.
He loves to talk.
He's a smart dude.
Yeah, maybe too smart. Or he's smart and thinks everyone's dumb. I think that's a lot of I think that might be what's going on there, but who knows. I appreciate it. Enjoy the tournament coming up. You got NBA playoffs coming up. This is when you get busy. And
a little bit.
Is it official that it's you and oh my God, why am I drawing a blank now on your college basketball partner for the tournament? I can't believe I just did that. Oh, wait a second. Oh my God.
It's one of the great names.
I was going to say Jim Spanarkle.
Yeah, it is Spanarkle.
Oh, yeah. I thought.
Yeah.
Wow, you guys have done that for how many years now?
20.
Oh my God.
3, maybe? The two of us, 23? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You know it's March when you hear the word Spanarkle.
Yes.
It's officially March.
I know it's March because no one who's paid attention to college basketball all season all of a sudden now starts telling me about their brackets. And I'm who's going to make
everyone's all of a sudden an expert. You're right.
Did you hear by any chance on Tuesday night, Reese Davis with the bacon?
I saw it on your clip.
How good was that? That was good.
Great. I love that stuff. I mean, to me, it's part of your job as a play-by-play announcer to allow the viewer or listener to know what's happening on site. So if there is a round of cheers and it doesn't pertain necessarily to the game or the score, you better know what's going on. So I give Reese a lot of credit. That means he was prepared for the moment. You throw in a little sizzling action. That's the way it should be done.
And his call sounded genuine. It didn't seem like he was trying to act.
No.
That's what I liked about it.
It was genuine. Yeah. He was genuinely happy for getting free bacon. I don't know if that counts for announcers, but the fans got free bacon.
Yeah. Well, a few things that's better than them throwing t-shirts into the crowd as far as I'm concerned. Ian, always a pleasure. Thanks for doing this.
All right, Jimmy. I'm going to start growing a beard right now.
Okay. You have a few days off here, so you can get the beard scenario going.
It won't look good. Trust me. All right.
Take care. Thanks.
See you, bud.
Be well. All right. Joining me now after a week off, as he does every week for our weekly Train of Thought segment from WFAN Radio in New York, SNY TV in New York, my buddy Sal Acata. Sal, are we feeling refreshed after a week in Aruba?
Not really. Not as much as I thought I would be. It was great. It goes too freaking fast, though.
Now, you got home in time for the Super Bowl, right? When did you come home?
Yeah, I got home Friday night, late that Friday night before the Super Bowl, and then I was back in time, of course, Super Bowl Sunday, right back into it. I worked Sunday morning on the fan, then the overnight after the Super Bowl, so back to the hectic schedule.
Now, we've spoken since, but we have not talked about the Super Bowl or halftime. Just do you have any Rihanna thoughts?
The only thing I'll say, well, two things on it. I love Rihanna, number one. I'm a fan of hers. I love her songs. I thought the show itself was whatever. It didn't do anything for me. And so I was watching it with my family, and one of the members happens to be my 6-year-old niece. Obviously, you have nieces. You know how this is. I don't. My daughter's too young. So this is really the first time I was in a spot where I had to kind of explain the crotch move or whatever. And I joked around about said something like maybe she has an itchy butt, you know, when she grabbed her. But I was in an uncomfortable spot. For me, I don't care. I don't get offended. But as an uncle in that spot, what are you supposed to do? That's my only.
You just say it's a dance move. That's all.
Yeah, I know, but it was. You know, you had no issue. I don't care myself, like I said, and I'll figure it out. But it was just the first time I ever had to actually think about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, listen, a 6-year old. I'm shocked that a 6-year old would pick up on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
watching her, you know, do certain movements, I think is different than, you know, what's she doing there, you know? So I just joked around about it.
The funny thing is, for most of it, she really didn't move around that much. I mean,
correct.
She wasn't, you know, putting forth a ton of effort, it looked like. So yeah,
did you know she was pregnant right away? I did not. I'm such an idiot. I was like, no.
I'll be honest, I was like half paying attention. I wasn't like fully, I'm looking at the halftime wagers on the phone. And I have it on in the background, and I'm, you know, I'm interested in the songs, but like, you know, like I said, we've talked about this before. That's not for me, because if it's an artist I like, I mean, I like her, but I'm not like, you know, a diehard. I don't need the 500 dancers dressed in the white marshmallow. Like, I'd rather just have one person there singing songs. I'm very old fashioned. Just give me one person singing the songs. I don't need the spectacle. It's not for me though. So, you know, I thought it was fine. I thought, so, like, people were like, there were some people like, you know, just like, what an amazing performance. Like, no, it wasn't. There was nothing amazing, but whatever.
I just, yeah, you're right. It's bottom line, it's not for us. So,
it's not for us.
The game is for me. That's it. And the game was great, I thought.
Yes, until the refs decided to.
Oh, will you stop it? Did you have the Eagles?
No, I had a great. I went 5-1 on my wagers, but
nice.
And I was rooting for the Chiefs. I just, it's just not there.
Yeah, I know,
not there.
It ruined what could have been a even better ending, but I'm not letting it mar the game. Plus, I had the Chiefs, so I was happy. Couldn't care less.
Yeah, there you go.
Just end the game. Get me home. I had a huge bet on the Chiefs.
Did you watch any of anything from NBA All-Star Weekend?
Yeah, I saw the highlights of McClung. I was blown away by the dunk contest there. I cannot believe how badly rated. I mean, I would never watch the NBA All-Star game. I like the weekend usually. Three-point contest, whatever, the rookie, whatever it may be, or the celebrity game, dunk contest a little bit. If anything, I have much more interest in the actual game. I can't believe how badly rated the game is.
But did you watch any of it live?
No, the game, absolutely not. And the actual... I don't know. I must have been doing something Saturday night to where I think I had to put my – oh, no, I was home with my daughter alone. My wife was away, so I'm putting the baby up to sleep. I'm out of it. I mean, there was no shot. I'm watching on Twitter as I'm trying to rock my daughter to sleep, Matt McClung, whatever the hell his name is, with the dunk contest. I got to watch the highlights.
imagine if it was a big event, then you really would. And I guess – yeah, I watched not 1 second. I didn't even see the highlights of the dunk. I saw nothing.
And you should watch it. It's must watch. He's actually that good. You have to watch it.
Yeah, I don't care. Did you watch any of the XFL?
Zero. Not even wasted a second of my life. Did you?
No, did not.
Okay.
No. It was the I watch no. I mean, I'm not watching anything that was on this weekend. What I did watch, which I'll tell you, I think they do such a phenomenal job. I want to give them a little praise because all of the WWE stuff on A&E, they have like A&E Legends, A&E Rivals, like A&E does all these WWE documentaries, and they're all just so well done. I watched a couple of those. Those are really good.
What, the older ones? Because there's a new season coming out, right?
The new season started this past Sunday.
Oh, right. It was the NWO one. Okay. Right. I've seen, I think,
I watched a couple of the old ones I had missed, like a Lex Luger one. It was really good.
Yes.
We've got to talk about the new MLB rules. You're a big baseball guy. I want to get your take. So they're going to be major, major change. I mean, this is, I think it's actually being underplayed how significant these changes are going to be for the season. Now, the first one is the banning of the shift, which I personally don't like, but it's not something I would like get up in arms over. Where do you stand on them banning the shift?
Same. I'm not going to go. I prefer it. I don't want the shift. And I get why you and others don't like it. You know, the hitters should be able to hit wherever they against the shift.
And it's a strategy. It's a strategy play.
I know, but I just hate where it's gotten to, where the hitters don't even care. So it to me, it made watching the game worse. So I think, regardless of where you stand, I do think it's going to be better for the game overall. So I'm happy.
I agree. I agree, but I don't like when you take away something that's strat. You know, it's like I've said this before, like in the NFL, like I said, you can't blitz on third down. I mean, that's what it's the equivalent of. But
right,
but it's not. It doesn't bother me that much.
You could still have the defensive strategy, just not, you know, four guys on one side of the base playing in.
Well, no, you have to have two. You have to have two guys on each side of the bag.
Right, but you could move them. Let's say if they want to move them up the middle, you move them as close as you can. Right. I'm okay. I'm curious to see how it's going to play out, but I'm a fan of it.
Yeah. Now the other change that's significant is pitch clock, 15 seconds if there's nobody on base, 20 seconds for the pitcher to throw the ball to the plate if there is a runner on base. I love this. I think it's going to lead to some anarchy in the beginning. I think it's going to take the players a little while to get used to, but I love this. I see no downside.
I don't love it just because I don't like the idea of being rushed. I never thought that the pace of play is the problem. I think it's the quality of play, but I'm not going to go nuts about it. And I'm fascinated to see how it does get implemented and what type of impact. Anybody that I've talked to, like Andy Martino of SNY, who covers, you know, the Mets and Yankees, and he's, you know, he saw this in action in the minor leagues, I think last year, raved about it. And anybody who's seen it says that it's going to change the game for the better. Everybody will love it.
I'm shocked the pace of play doesn't bother you, because I'll tell you, when I watch the games, you know, and the pitcher is just going for a walk around the mound in between pitches.
Right.
I don't know. That drives me nuts. So I love this. And part of this rule, too, is the hitter has to be in the batter's box by the time there's 8 seconds on the pitch clock. The batters are a big problem in this, too, because they step out, fix the gloves, touch their crotch, take off their hat. So I love all of this. I think it's going to be great for the game.
Yeah. I'm fascinated to see how it's gonna play out. And look, I get they need to speed up the game in today's world where nobody has an attention span longer than, you know, 2 seconds.
Right. And the other change, they're going to limit what a pitcher can do when there's a runner on base in terms of how many pickoff throws and stepping off. I don't love that one. I think that's tinkering again with sort of the game there. I mean, nobody steals bases now, but let's say there is a base stealer on first and you're limiting how many times you could throw over. I don't love that, but again, I'm not going to go crazy about it.
But I think the idea is to now have base stealing become more of a thing, right? If you throw over there twice, now all of a sudden you're screwed. You can't throw over there anymore. Maybe we get more action on the base paths.
But the players don't want that. Players want home runs because that's what makes them money when they get contracts. You're not going to get contract for stolen bases. So that
is true.
And then the last one, which I don't understand on any level, is the bigger base. I don't know what that's supposed to do.
But. Why? Player safety, I think, is a part of it.
Well, how is that safe to have a bigger base?
Well, you have less happening in a smaller area. Cleats, you know, first base in particular, with ankles, guys getting, you know, stepping on each other's feet, you know, whatever.
I think that's still going to happen.
They said it's a big – Buck Showalter said it looks like a pizza box, right? Or maybe it was Cora who said that. Showalter said, though, it's startling how big the bases look in comparison to what you're used to. So that's another thing that might be weird.
I don't understand that one at all. I got to ask you, because obviously you're a Mets fan. I'm a Yankee fan, and I still feel like it was part of my childhood, the passing of Tim McCarver. Were you a big as a Met fan? And I mean, that's your wheelhouse as a kid, probably 7, 8, 9 years old, getting into baseball. McCarver and Ralph Kiner calling games locally in New York. Were you a big McCarver guy?
Huge. Yeah. Loved him growing up. He was the guy with Ralph Kiner. And remember, like, you know, unfortunately for me, I only have 1986 to go back to. So I've watched the highlight video, which is a must watch, 1986, you to remember a million times. McCarver has all the highlights on there. I remember his calls. I grew up loving Tim McCarver. You'll get a kick out of the story. I told this on the air the other day because we were on as we got the news that he passed away. I was live on the air actually filling in for Craig Carton on Afternoons on the Fan. And my one encounter with McCarver was that I saw him outside of Shea Stadium and went to get his autograph with I was always a big broadcaster guy. Oh my God, Tim McCarver, can you sign my hat? It's a blue Mets hat. I had a blue Sharpie pen. He goes, a blue pen on a blue hat. Now who's going to see that? And kept walking. And I was like, him.
That is tremendous.
You got to sign my book. And it scarred me. Now I love McCarver, obviously, whatever. I get it. No big deal. But I called Francesa and Russo to talk about that. Remember when McCarver left for the Yankees?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
So that was a big topic on the Fan. I called Mike and Dog. Mike goes, maybe next time bring a white hat.
That's funny. Oh my God. That's tremendous. You know, I met him once too. I don't remember my memory so bad. I'm going to have to call my friends because I went with friends to Fenway and I think he was there doing a book signing somewhere near there. And we bumped into him.
Yeah.
And wow. I don't remember the circumstances, but yeah, but we had it really, really, really good as kids in New York. If you were into baseball, because the Mets had Ralph Kiner and McCarver, who were both characters. The Yankees had Phil Rizzuto and Bill White, and
yep.
It was always, even as I was a Yankee fan, but I would watch the Mets as a kid, and Ralph Kiner was great and McCarver was great.
Great, and I know I love them. In my childhood. Yeah. And then, of course, McCarver with Fox. And I know that he's, was the Mets guy, but he called all those Yankee dynasty postseason games alongside Joe Buck. Like,
yeah.
I love Tim McCarver. And I don't think there will, you never say never, but he's the best baseball analyst that I have ever watched or listened to.
And I know, I don't know how much, I think this is like a Twitter social media thing, but McCarver got a lot of backlash when social media started. And I think, he never, ever, ever bothered me. I always, always enjoyed McCarver. So
he loved doing the game. So many analysts now, it's a job to them. McCarver, I know it's a job, but he loved doing it. And he was passionate, obviously knowledgeable. I miss him. I loved him on the air.
Now, there was another death this week with the passing of Richard Belzer. And I bring this up for two reasons. One, I loved Belzer as a regular on the Howard Stern show. He was hilariously funny. And back was when Howard was on K-Rock, Belzer was on all the time, and I was a big fan. And the other reason I have to bring this up is because we have this longstanding argument, you and I, where you love Hulk Hogan, and I hate Hulk Hogan. And Richard Belzer, and I think maybe now that I look back on it, it probably started my hatred of Hulk Hogan when he dropped Richard Belzer on his head and made the guy bleed. And Richard Belzer sued, and I don't know if he won or they settled, but Hulk Hogan did a bad thing there.
I don't remember that, but I remember reading about it. Was that when he said something like wrestling was fake or whatever and Hogan got ticked off?
Hogan put him in a sleeper hold and he choked him out, and then Belzer collapsed to the ground. My excellent producer Shelby is telling me that Belzer got $400,000 from Hulk Hogan. He should have got more.
All right. That's a drop in the bucket for the Hulkster. I don't know Belzer. I honestly, to this day, don't know what he did, but I do remember him when I used to watch Stern on the E Channel. Right? Yeah. Wasn't he on there?
Yeah.
That's how I knew who he was when I would watch Howard.
Well, he was a stand up comic. Then he became very known for being on Law and Order, which I never watched, but he's huge on Law. No, not Law. Well, and I think he was. Wait a second. And he was on Homicide. Was he on Law and Order too? Let me look. I'm going to look it up. Homicide is what. Homicide was a show on NBC. Yeah, and he was on Law and Order. So he was on both of those shows. But I knew him as a stand up, and I knew him as a regular on Stern, and he was always so funny. So I had to mention that and get the shot in at Hulk Hogan. The worst.
You're nuts.
The worst. All right. I think that's all I got for this week. We'll read reviews next week. We're going to be in the slow time here now that the NFL is over and we got to wait for the NBA playoffs to kick in. I can't get into college basketball at all. Are you getting into college hoops?
No, not yet. I mean, once tournament play starts up, I'll get into that. The conference tournaments. Although I say get into it and then at this point in my life, I'm not really into it anymore. I don't know why that is. But
it's a niche sport. It's become a niche sport.
I know,
sport.
But I used to get into it. I used to like filling out the brackets, which I know you hate. I just don't care enough anymore at this particular – I don't have a rooting interest. I didn't go to a college. So, unfortunately, Home Depot doesn't have a team or a Suffolk Community College, which is where I used to be. But I don't know. I don't have a rooting interest. I'm not betting big on these games. I do love the game if I'm watching it, the style of play. So I'll get into it come tournament time, but not as much as I used to.
Oh, see, that's a big problem. So I can't watch it at all. Then the tournaments come and I'll watch it. I'll bet the games. I get together with my buddies. I'll watch it.
Yeah.
And I can't believe how bad the quality of play is. It's either
interesting.
the whole game is missed layups, missed free throws, and missed threes. It's unbelievable how bad it is.
I can't speak to the quality of play, but I like the style better than the NBA, where there's no defense, three-point shooting. You get the half-court style. Each possession matters. But, yeah, you're right. Maybe the quality. One local thing for me that I like, Rutgers is good. So I'll follow that storyline. The former coach of Stony Brook, Steve Peichel, is now at Rutgers, and he does a good job. So
nobody
maybe I'll follow
that.
Yeah. So I'm just saying a local angle, something to follow. Come on, support the local team.
No, I'll follow what I bet. That's what I'll do. I'll find out. I'll bet the first day of the tournament, and then there's my rooting interest. But even with that, like, I find after the first weekend, it's like then it's like a crash. It all comes crashing down. Yeah, it's sad when football ends, man. It's sad. It's sad
when it comes crashing down, and it hurts.
What hurts me?
Did I lose you? You there?
I'm here now. I'm here.
Oh.
Yeah, we'll just wrap it up. All right, I'll wrap it up now. All right, Sal, appreciate it, and we'll see you next week, and hopefully you can get refreshed from the vacation. Sounds like you need a refreshing still.
Yeah, I need a vacation from the vacation. Going away with a wife and a two-year-old is not a vacation, but...
I was trying not to get you to go there, and then you went there. All right, we'll see you next week.
All right, talk to you later.
All right. All right, my thanks to Ian Eagle and Sal Licata. If you are not a subscriber to the SI Media with Jimmy Trina podcast, make sure you subscribe. Check out recent episodes. We had a great review of Fox's Super Bowl telecast last week with Brian Curtis of The Ringer. So listen to that. Richard Deitch 2 weeks ago. Chris Berman 3 weeks ago. Jason McCourty 4 weeks ago. So check those out. Subscribe to the pod. Leave a review on Apple. We'll read it next week with Sal in the Train of Thoughts segment. All right. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it. We'll see you next week. Stay safe and take care.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
Home Club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.